Where do great ideas come from? Great art and artists can be famously inspired by their surroundings, and they're often ingenious and notorious borrowers. The Baltimore Symphony Orchestra is embracing that idea this season with a series of performances that focus on shared musical roots found in classical music. Maren Alsop, music director of the Baltimore Symphony, joins us. Thanks so much for being back with us, Maren.
It's great to be here, Scott.
One of the best-known pieces of American music we're hearing right now, George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue.
That very famous glissando that we just heard, you know, the sort of scoop in the clarinet line at the beginning, he actually stole that. He heard the principal clarinet player in the Paul Whiteman band warming up, and he was fooling around, and, you know, he just got on a roll and did this huge glissando, and he said, "Oh, that's fantastic, I'm going to use that." And that's where that came from.
So tell us about the series. What you intend to do now?
The overview of our series is all about our shared cultural roots, and I really tried to focus on the various immigrant populations that settled in our region. And, of course, looking back, there was a huge Russian migration to the area, especially in the first wave of immigration to the Baltimore region and the surrounding areas. This led me to programming quite a bit of Russian music, and, of course, then led me to the connections of the influence on the Russian population. Of course, George Gershwin is the son of Russian Jewish immigrants, and Russian music and American music share a lot of similarities. They were both, certainly in terms of symphonic music, both started at about the same time. Mm-hmm. There's a passion, there's an immediacy to the musics that we share. It's been a great season to explore these ideas, and so we've put a special focus on the music of George Gershwin.
Listen to a little bit another one of his compositions, Concerto in F. Some influence of jazz, too?
Oh, without a doubt. The interesting thing about this arrangement that you're listening to is that this is in the Paul Whiteman version. So this orchestration was done by Ferdy Groffé, who was sort of the staff house arranger for Paul Whiteman's band. So it gives it, I think, a little more punch, a little more jazz influence, and we're just in the process right now of recording these arrangements with Jean-Yves Thibaudet as mm-hmm. soloist. And, you know, they have banjo and, you know, rhythm section, and so they really bump up the jazzy element, I think. And, of course, with Gershwin, we always hear this influence of jazz and what's about to come. I mean, we have to remember that mm-hmm. this is the early, you know, we're talking about the 20s, early 30s. I mean, jazz is just coming into its own. So, in many ways, Gershwin is really foreshadowing what's coming. He was an amazing, brilliant composer and real visionary. If he had lived past his 30s, I mean, no telling what he could have done. I mean, probably people know that he died very suddenly of a brain tumor. And, you know, he hadn't even reached 40 years old. And if he'd gone on, you know, just imagine what kind of symphonic poems and symphonies, I mean, in my opinion, he would have written.
The first introduction to serious music as Americans is Porgy and Bess. And if we could hear just one of the great American songs of all time, written by George Gershwin and his brother.
Summertime and the living is cotton is high. Oh, your dad is rich and your ma is good looking. So hush, little baby.
A critic famously observed that Porgy and Bess was a great folk opera, a great Jewish folk opera.
Looking back, the kind of vision and also chutzpah you had to have to write this kind of opera at the time George Gershwin did, an opera that was really a celebration of indigenous American music. I mean, he fell in love with the African-American voices and the spirituals and everything that had been brought to America from Africa. And he writes an opera where he says, I never want this opera performed except with an all-African-American cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, and for the time, what a statement to make. You know, as we look back, it really is, it's so telling because this opera was not premiered at the Met until 1983 for this exact reason. And
I never knew that until now.
It's shocking.
It is shocking.
And
by 1983, it had played around the world as an exemplar of American genius.
But, you know, there were still many, many houses that had issues with this. But George Gershwin, you know, he was all about the quality of the music and the quality of the voice and the authenticity of the text and the story.
One of these mornings, you're going to rise up singing.
Let me ask you about a piece that I must say is new to me, Blue Monday. He apparently wrote this before Porgy and Bess.
So Blue Monday was really just part of a vaudeville show in the early 20s. I think it was 1922 when he wrote it. He somehow got hooked into writing a little piece for this revue show. And this is where he met Paul Whiteman, because Paul Whiteman's band was the Pitt Orchestra. So this is a 20-minute chamber opera. It's written 11 years before Porgy and Bess, and the music is fantastic. You can hear the ideas.
Like 24 or 25.
Yeah. Oh, he was just a kid. Yeah. The opera, Blue Monday, was cut out of the revue show because people thought it was too depressing. You know, because he's trying to capture everything in opera, you know, the jealousy and the murder and the death and the mistaken identities all in 20 minutes. So it's, I mean, the book is really very silly, but the music is fantastic. And you can hear the ideas already with this young George Gershwin starting to percolate. And we're actually performing this piece on our season this year.
I must admit, although I don't like Sunday, I have a fit when I go through Blue Monday. Monday's the one day that my dice lose. It just refused.
It was performed a couple times when they were warming up to bring it to Broadway, and then it was cut when I was just getting started with my own orchestra, Concordia. I couldn't resist digging it up and putting it back together, and so that recording you were hearing is a recording I made about 15 years ago.
Now, of course, it's inconceivable to think of anything that Gershwin wrote being cut from anybody's presentation.
But, you know, somehow he I'm sure it bothered him, but there's no recollection really of him being upset about it. He made the contact, and this is how he met Paul Whiteman, who then said, oh, maybe I'll have you do a piece for this concert I'm doing, you know, sort of American jazz concert. And that's how Rhapsody in Blue came about. If that collaboration hadn't happened, who knows whether Rhapsody in Blue would have ever been written.
Maestro Marin Alsop, music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. You can hear more music from Marin Alsop and read her latest essay on our website, nprmusic.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.